You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, world hunger and food insecurity is a recurring problem in most parts of the developing world. Among the many potential biotechnologies that are available and the different ways in which they can be applied, genetic modification, or GM, as we know, of crops demands a particular attention. Genetically modified crops possessing, of course, genes from different species could possibly relieve global food shortages. I felt like this discussion is very, very high. Mr. Mukwebo, how are you today?
Hi, Tapelo. I am very much good. And you?
I am very well. Thank you for asking. And how are things?
Things are good. Today, the champ is growing.
How old is the champ today?
An extra year.
How old?
Hey. Somewhere there.
Somewhere there.
We are quarter two. Hey, we are almost about to leave the youth era.
Yeah, it's almost that time, eh?
Yeah, it's a bit scary. Wish we could have more years.
Definitely. But I hope it was a good day, though.
It was. I spent most of it at home.
Nice.
I'm being chauffeured to some place I don't know where.
You see, on your birthday, Velu should be chauffeured. You know, shouldn't be driving on your birthday. Levels, there's levels to these things, you know.
Yeah, you have to cover the back seat.
Definitely.
indeed, Tapelo.
No, happy birthday, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I hope God adds a whole lot more. Until he comes with the clouds of heaven. But happy birthday to you. Wishing you the best going forward.
Amen.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much on your birthday for taking time to join us. We really appreciate it. And yeah, like I said, may God continue to bless you for that. Let's define this thing. Maybe in the simplest way, genetically modified crops. These are crops with species from other species. Is that what it is?
I mean, we can call it that.
Yeah.
Call them species, because at the end of the day, they have to go back to the hierarchy.
Yeah.
And be ranked accordingly based on how they came to be. But then in the simplest thing as possible, we could say that these GMOs, let me call them GMOs just for shortening, they are mostly plants that are genetically designed or genetically produced from different, picking up from different species of plants that have different resistances on different things, so that they can come up with a plant or a seed that will be able to withstand different temperatures, that can be able to survive different conditions of where it has been raised, just to simplify it.
Yeah.
Or maybe just to bring it back without cutting corners and trying to break down the actual definition. We can say that, let's say we want to have a car that can drive for a very long distance.
Yeah.
Then we realize that, okay, if we can have a car that at some point it will be using electricity that it generated itself.
Yeah.
And then at some point, if that electricity is not strong enough for it maybe to go uphill, then it will be using gas.
Mm.
That way we have created a car that will be able to drive for a long distance using both electricity that it generated itself and also gas when it's required for it to work.
Yeah.
In essence, we will be saving a lot in terms of the cost of traveling when we're looking at the amount of fuel that we'll be using, because at some point the car will be using electricity. So with the GMOs, it's more or less that we are developing a seed or a plant that will be able to survive where we want it to be, or to grow to an extent that we want it to grow, or to grow in a faster rate in order for us to beat the hunger that you were talking about in the opening.
Yeah,
that is what the GMOs are all about. So it's a These are just seeds that were developed for specific criteria,
yeah,
or for us to be able to have more crop yield, or for us to have crops that will be able to survive the climate change that we're basically talking about on a daily basis.
Mm.
So the GMOs are centered around that. So it's more of us trying to develop something that will,
yeah,
survive that which we have a problem with.
Yeah, I mean, it all sounds good on paper. I mean, we have a problem of world hunger, right? And if there's a way in
That's
which
true.
We can find better ways in which we can produce more for the world so that we can alleviate hunger, it all makes sense on paper. And I want to get into the implications. But before we get into the implications, this thing of world hunger, is it a thing or we are just exaggerating?
We can say it's a thing. We can say it's an exaggeration at some point. I mean,
okay,
we just spoke about the manipulation of,
yeah,
money right now.
Yeah.
The thing that has been happening right now.
Yeah.
I mean, someone could have done that maybe for them to get rich or for them to create a chaos of the inflections and,
yeah,
all this kind of stuff. But hunger is there in many,
yeah,
countries, in many places. If we see many people fleeing from their homes,
mm,
going to other places, but then we look at where they're staying,
mm,
we realize that there is not exactly war, but there is no food. There,
mm,
is no means for them to get jobs. There is no means for them to provide for their families. There is no means for them to actually even get some basic food,
mm,
because maybe there's drought. Maybe their farms that could be giving them food are,
mm,
not usable. You know, we can look at a whole lot of things. So,
mm,
hunger is there in many places as we speak.
Yeah.
We can also take a look at war-infested areas.
Mm.
There is hunger there. We shouldn't maybe just look down upon it.
Mm.
People that are affected by the war are currently facing hunger problems.
Yeah.
Hence, there will be many organizations that would want to donate food,
mm,
for those people. So, irrespective of those people that have just been affected by war, there are countries that cannot produce enough food for themselves.
Mm.
Like, for instance, we can speak about how Zimbabwe, our neighboring country,
yeah,
came to a point where they couldn't supply enough for the
yeah,
country itself, and seeing how they are trying to better that strength and trying to make sure that they can produce more than enough that can actually be enough for them to provide for,
mm,
every person that is living in the country. So hunger is there. Not only in other continents, but even in our country,
yeah,
as well. There are people that are trying to find means to have food,
mm,
you know, and you know, but they can't do that. So that also result in hunger. So we cannot dismiss it. It's there,
yeah,
and it's happening. But at some point, then it can be alleviated by certain propagandas that,
yeah,
makes the hunger to happen, which maybe,
yeah,
we can talk about,
yeah,
some other time.
Now, let's get into the technology coming into this space, I suppose, trying to solve the hunger problems. And like I said, it all sounds good on paper. And if you think about it, if we can be able to produce far much more crop and quicker and faster,
yeah,
we can feed more people, we can alleviate poverty, we can make food available and even cheaper. The more we must produce these things, the more the prices,
mm,
come down, even to those that maybe are in the lower LSMs. They can also be able to afford it. But what are the implications of genetically modified foods in terms of this world hunger? Isn't technology just now trying to interfere where it shouldn't?
Yes, it will always get to a point where it interferes,
yeah,
where it shouldn't.
Yeah.
Right? More especially when we look at these modifications that are mostly happening. And,
mm,
you know, some techno enthusiasts,
mm,
wanting to even replicate things that they're not supposed to,
mm,
replicate, or,
mm,
things that will rather be deemed as unethical for,
mm,
them to be modified,
mm,
or to actually come up with that kind of creation. But then when it comes to some of the maybe the bad of this part of the GMO, which,
mm,
I believe is what you're asking,
yeah,
there are some sort of environmental concerns.
Okay,
let me just start there as, yeah, an environmentalist.
Yeah,
because some of these seeds that have been created, they end up being somewhat a bit dangerous to,
mm,
some of the plants that are already there,
mm,
in the field, and which kind of shifts a bit in terms,
mm,
of how the ecology in that certain field or,
mm,
that said field has been.
Mm.
Say maybe we are introducing a new plant,
mm,
into a specific ecosystem. Mm. That plant will survive, of course, because we have made it to be able to survive in that place.
Yeah.
But then there will be a bit of a shift or a change in that said ecosystem that we are introducing that plant in.
Yeah.
Because even if it's a farm, it's an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Even if it's whatever it is, it's an ecosystem.
Yeah.
And one thing about these GMOs, most of them, they're able to produce their own pesticides themselves. They're able to resist certain locusts that are necessary for that ecosystem, bees that are necessary for that ecosystem. So if you have those plants introduced in that ecosystem, then in a way we are kind of like changing the entire ecosystem in terms of how pollination happens, how grasshoppers are able to move the gymnosperms into other places, into other areas. You know, we are kind of like changing or altering the natural ecosystem as it is, which becomes very bad. But in this, in essence, we are trying to do good, and in the same time, we are destroying that said ecosystem. Say maybe it's just an entire, maybe 10 hectares or 25 hectares of crops that have been planted in that, in a specific area. Those seeds are going to fly off on wind, or maybe some animals that will come and pass by are going to carry those seeds to other areas, which is going to then also cause another problem to the plants that are going to be on the other, on the other area. This will also lead to some sort of mutation, also leads to new diseases that might appear, that might develop from the germination or of those seeds that will be flying to other areas. So in just that kind of introduction of these GMOs in a said place, that can also alter in a way an ecosystem of that area. Then there is also, you know, our own human health risk, because at some point we are going to eat this food, right?
Yeah.
And it can, it can maybe not cause us to have disease or any problems today, but in the long run, it will also alter our own genetic makeup.
Sure.
Because it's genetically modified at the end of the day. So we don't know how that food will be operating in our body after we eat that food. Might find that maybe as time goes on, we start having people that have got specific diseases that we never had before because of the introduction of the type of food that we are that we have now introduced into our own bodies based on the GMOs. But in the same time, we're trying to create something that is good for us, that will help us to alleviate, to reduce the number of hunger, the amount of people that are dying of hunger or that don't have food. We are trying to do that, but in the same time, that is one other thing that will actually be happening.
Yeah, that was going to be actually my question, which says that does, okay, seems like we've lost Mr. Mugwebo there a little bit. Let's see if he will come back. But that's an interesting point that he's making there. Mr. Mugwebo, yes, you're back now. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes,
we had a bit of an effect leak.
Yeah, I was saying you're making a very important point there about, you know, the fact that to me it sounds as if we are trying to achieve something, right? Which is to alleviate hunger. But the fact that we are introducing certain species and certain plants into a certain ecological system, we are in effect disturbing that system in a way, right? And so my question is,
yeah,
is it a case of the end, which is ending poverty, justifying the means of ecological disruptions? Is that what it is? Or is there a way to bring the two worlds together?
I think the most important thing is to, for us not to just jump into saying that we want genetically modified plants in a place where we don't really need them.
Yeah,
I think there should be there should be a need analysis, a proper need analysis that is done. Say maybe it's in Gauteng, and we know that we don't have any shortage. I'm just making an example.
Yeah,
we know that we don't have any shortage of food. We have got enough crops. We have got enough flour and everything that we need. There is no need for farmers in and the farmers are planting meeting, they don't have any issues, they're able to produce good crop yield and they're meeting the demand. There's no need for them to introduce GMOs, right? But then if we go maybe to KZN and the farmers there are facing, let's say, maybe an issue of drought. They were having a lot of floods. Let's make an example with that. The floods now have affected their farms and they're unable to revive the soil in to get to a point where it will have like good nutrition or nutrients for the plants to grow and effectively and produce good crop yield. Now they need GMOs for that matter. Then they can do it. They can implement it on their area. And it should be maybe an area that we can say that this area, we are going to maybe create boundaries, because there are sort of boundaries that are created even in farms to prevent diseases that are coming from outside. So those necessary measures would need to be made for us to not to be able to reach our desired goal and in the same time not harm the environment. So it would just need a proper need analysis. Because at some point, you find that farmers would be adopting the GMOs because, yes, it would actually be a guaranteed case that they will produce a good crop yield. And in essence, they will be able to make returns in their investment to their farms, which is, yes, a good reason for them to do it, because at the end of the day, farming is business. And also, it is supplementing the entire community or the general community at large. So I think it's just a matter of generating a proper need analysis with relevant people, not just only farmers, but with each and every stakeholder that is needed in that said area or that specific in that specific topic or criteria. Then we sit down, we ask ourselves, do we need GMOs in Gauteng? Do we need GMOs in this area? What kind of GMOs do we need? What kind of measures are we going to follow in order for everybody to be safe? But at the end of the day, if we're talking about trying to reach goals, there will be certain areas that are going to cry and that are not going to be like taken into consideration. But if it's done appropriately and done in a way that will follow all the measures that would have been set, I think at least we would be able to balance the equation.
Yeah, in my mind, and I mean, I'm not an environmentalist, but you are, you would better, you know, this one. But in my mind, the way I see it, in any case, whether we go to KZN or we go to Limpopo, whatever, we will be in a way disturbing the ecological system of that particular place. It might not necessarily be, you know, fauna and all those sort of stuff, but the fact that we are planting something where kettles used to graze, for example, is affecting them, because now they'll be grazing genetically modified things there, because I don't think they've got the mind and intellect that we have to say, okay, no, I'm not supposed to eat this thing. So it's almost like we are introducing them to something that's foreign, that they are not used to, because we're trying to say, okay, in this particular place, the damage won't necessarily be that much, because here we do need genetically modified foods and all those sort of stuff. But let's leave the Gautengers, you know, the Gautengers, and maybe they don't need it, the Cape Townians as well, and all those, and more like your urban areas kind of find ways to run away from this thing. And it's almost like the rural areas where these type of things are introduced into the ecological system, which disturbs that. That's how I'm seeing it, to say either way, whether we want to embrace it or not, we are going to affect the ecological system. Just depends what that system it looks like at that particular point in time. But either way, it's not something that we can run away from. It is something that we need to embrace.
That is true.
Maybe like you're saying, a proper needs analysis will say, let's balance it out somehow.
Yeah, I think at some point, these things have been happening, Tabelo, because take a look at the chicken that you're eating.
Yeah.
If you ask yourself how long it takes to reach a maturity stage or to reach a stage where they can say we are slaughtering this chicken.
Apparently 6 days. Instead of 6 months, now it's 6 days. Hey, we are eating things, eh?
same thing with the cattle that it's been farmed, right?
Yeah.
Then they're creating specific, breeding this cattle multiple times so that they can have this specific cattle that can survive whatever.
Yeah.
During that time that of the crossbreeding and all the stuff that they're doing, there's a lot that is happening in that cattle, and the food that they're going to be feeding it, the injections that are going to be given it, let alone the bri packs that we buy. There's chemicals that are injected to that.
Hey, bri packs.
So one way or another, even if the cattle are going to end up eating these GMOs, they have already... They're already having it in their DNA, unless it maybe is the cattle that has been grown in the villages, and it was there for millennia. Grandfather had this cattle for many years, and we know that if there is any crossbreeding that happened, it happened with Mr. Jones' cattle, who also has been having his cattle for years.
Yeah.
But if it's cattle that was just lent to grandfather at some point in his life, and by the government, and say that, take this cattle for 5 years. After 5 years, you're giving back the number of cattle. Then we know for sure.
Yeah.
You don't know where the government got the cattle.
Definitely. Before you look at how prevalent these GMOs are, for yourselves as environmentalists, how much of a concern are these technologies that are introduced to make hunger go away a concern to you guys?
In as far as environment is concerned, like I go back to the earlier answers that I was giving you.
And
The word I should have used then was cross-pollination.
That is the
major problem that we can say we have, because now it's changing the way the nature is, like the way things are in nature. It is just changing or shifting things to a point that it will be destroying already the biomes that we are having, with the type of plants that we're having in that biome, which those plants make that biome, right? So if we're introducing these GMOs in a large number, yes, some of them might cross-pollinate and make those plants extra strong, but it is going to be changing the genetic makeup of those plants. And if maybe they were better suited to keep that biome alive or a wetland alive, and it becomes a change and it's not like that anymore, then it becomes an environmental concern. So that is major concern, but that I can put into the picture right now, the issue of cross-pollination when it comes to the introduction of these plants. That is one thing that one of the things that can maybe be an issue that really need to be taken into consideration, because at some point maybe we don't know how these plants have been behaving around those GMOs, but they do get changed when it comes to cross-pollination, because the bees do that, the insects do that, the wind does that, and it does that in an extent that maybe we might not notice that, oh, it's because of this,
That's interesting. So wind does carry these seeds and they then dumps it somewhere and there's cross-pollination there.
Or it dumps it onto another.
There's no running away from this cross-pollination thing.
No. You can't run away from it. Unless maybe we're going to be saying that, okay, from now on, these GMOs will be planted in greenhouses. Where they will grow inside there.
And whoever
goes in there, whenever they leave that area, they are living and making sure that they don't have anything on them that they will carry it outside. Just like maybe, I don't know if you've been to a chicken farm. You would notice that whenever you enter a chicken farm, there has to be a bit of sterilization that happens to your feet or your car. Say maybe you're entering into the chicken coop. So the same thing would need to be done. Whenever a said person is leaving the greenhouse, would have to do that. But then how big would that greenhouse be if we want to be producing crops for a community of 10,000 people?
Definitely.
How big would that greenhouse be?
Definitely.
I think one way or another, we cannot run away.
You can't run away from it. We just have to find a balance, I suppose.
Yes, that is very true.
Between the two extremes there. Prevalent, these GMOs?
Excuse me?
Are they prevalent? I suppose in today's demand and the world wanting food, like food, what do these call fast foods and all these things, we are genetically modifying everything, right? So that we can get people to eat at these restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, that is what is happening every day. Like I made a quick example with the cattle and the chicken, right? Because it's happening every day. And it's changing what was to become something that is new. So it's either we are changing with it or we are regulating it by maybe putting laws that people should not buy this kind of seeds for them, like to reduce this impact that will that they will bring into the economy. But at the end of the day, it brings also more good if we are putting it in an instance, because we are we are traveling, we're currently in an issue of climate change, which is currently happening right now. So one way or another, we need these GMOs to withstand what our normal plants cannot withstand.
Yeah,
the seasons are changing. We are having more like multiple seasons in just one season.
Yeah,
like recently this the hail that just fell.
Yeah,
I mean, it's something that we have not had that kind of or that amount of hail in a while in our in our country.
Yeah,
we've not had have hail that looks like snow.
Yeah,
You know, rain that is currently raining, the kind of cold that is happening, the snow that is still falling. We, I mean, recently, I think it was a few weeks back, we did have snow again somewhere in the coast. So that those kinds of seasonal changes are the things that will keep up keep us pushing on forward to the genetically modified crops.
Yeah.
Because their own natural plants cannot keep up with the demand on their own.
Exactly. Exactly.
So in a way, until these plants are able to like match up or kind of like be adapted to how the seasons are changing, then we can say that we can slow down on these GMOs. But looking at things, Tapelo, I think we are going to be using these GMOs for a very long time. I mean, the soybeans, we've been eating those soybeans for a very long time. The kids in the feeding scheme are eating the same soybeans that are genetically modified.
Yeah, that's very true.
Remember, I made a, my grandmother who used to farm, you know, at some point she was using normal normal corn seeds to plant. But at some point they were now red. They were genetically modified. They were given, they were being coated with specific chemicals for them to survive in the soil. For animals that will be trying to eat them, like those small ground rats.
Yeah.
Seeds
after
my grandmother planted
because
the seeds will now be a bit more resistant.
So
one way or another, it's just going to be zigzag.
It's going to be zigzag.
Plants that will still need to genetically modify,
yeah,
which will be modifying us inside as well.
Yeah, changing our DNA structure. Sure.
It's
gonna
modified me and Tapelo as well.
We have genetically modified kids themselves. You know, the kids' DNA won't be the same as the parents' DNA. Can you imagine how much of a pandemic is that? You know, because then these guys that keep on, you know, bapiga bantwana can keep on saying no, Aksoam, because of the genetic modification. It's going to be a pandemic, this thing. I think we really need to start looking at it very, very differently. Because changing our genetic modification because of these foods that are genetically modified is a pandemic on its own. Justice, are you back? Okay, seems like he will be back there. But yeah, just imagine, because these genetically modified foods, they also genetically modify wherever they are going. They change the structure of the places that they are housed in. So which means even with us as human beings, by continuing to eat these genetically modified foods, we might find ourselves, you know, also genetically modified. And imagine your child has a DNA that is different to yours. Absolutely different to yours. Doesn't match yours. And can you imagine the implications of that? I think the implications of that are just dire on their own if you start thinking about it. But yeah, that's exactly the conversation that we're having. And Gupet, guys, I don't know if we can be able to have less and less of these genetically modified foods, because like Justice is saying, this is something that's going to be happening. You know, it will keep on happening because of the world that we live in today, with the demand for food, demand for restauranting and, you know, wanting nice food at the restaurants and all those sort of stuff. We are not going to change from having these genetically modified foods. My last one there, my good sir, before I let you guys say that, the network is also not good as well. Do retailers and even food farmers and all these guys, do they have a responsibility to inform the public about the food that they are selling that is actually genetically modified?
I think when mostly food is sold, but that's a good one. I think
yeah,
that's a good one.
Yeah,
I was now thinking about the juice content that we're drinking.
Yeah,
it's coming from A, from B, then you have those information that there's some such and such and such and such that is in this food.
Mm.
In essence, I think it's very important that every person should know what kind of food they're putting inside their body. Every person should know. Apart from it just being said to be organic, come and buy organic food. I mean, you don't know how organic that food is at the end of the day. I mean, we're just being sold that it's organic. We're just being sold that it's fresh from the mark, from the farm, you know. But we don't know, like, in essence. And I think it's one thing that is kind of taken for granted, more especially when it comes to vegetables that we are buying. Because usually you buy vegetables, you just go there, maybe you need 5 butternuts. There's no content of what is inside that butternut or when you're buying it. It's just like that. So I feel it's very important that the stores themselves, they put it into consideration that they give out those information to the customers, because the customers are the ones buying from the store. The store is buying the food from the farmer.
Yeah.
Or the farmer brings the food to the store one way or another. So the responsibility between the farmer and the customer has to rest between the farmer and the store, then the store to the customer. So that's how I feel like it should work. Unless if I am going to buy these things directly to the farmer.
Yeah.
Because when we're buying seeds, we go to the store, to the specific store that we are buying that seed from. It's a genetically modified seed, or it is coated like the one that my grandmother used to use. When I'm going to buy that seed, of course I'll be told in the store that this seed is going to help you to reduce the amount of pesticide that you're going to use, or that you might use because of maybe the outbreak of insects, or the outbreak of maybe aphids. So these seeds is going to help you to be able to ensure that your plant will grow easily from the soil until it becomes of maturity age. So now then I would know as a farmer that this is happening, but it is less likely that when I take that crop into maybe a sawmill, not a sawmill, why am I thinking about a sawmill, a mill, then I won't tell them that this seed was modified. I'll just give it to them, and it's going to get mixed with someone's maize that was not even modified to begin with. So I think there's just that lack of information that moves from one person, one farmer to the next, or a farmer to the customer, farmer to the mill core, you know, all those kind of stuff. I think that is the sole responsibility of people that will be handling from one point to another. Hence, I did mention a bit about laws that will govern all these things. These laws should hold people into account, because with the bripe packs that we buy, they actually write all the chemicals that have been injected to that bripe pack for it to survive, or for it to stay longer inside the refrigerator. Because some of those chicken, they're very old. You find that maybe it has been, maybe it was slaughtered 5 months ago, but then you're now eating it now.
They keep injecting it.
They injected certain chemicals, or maybe they placed it into certain chemicals for it to survive longer. You are able to still get it at least still fresh. But not really.
It's
flesh.
Not fresh. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah,
not fresh,
not
at
really
all.
Flesh. So I think it's the responsibility of. It's the responsibility of, you know, me when I'm given as a farmer, I should make sure that I have maybe a paper or maybe something in paper that I will make the store owner sign that I did explain this to you, and then the store owner has to make it a point that these plants have gone through this and this and this and that, you know, for it to be edible. I remember at home when my dad would plant, would start spraying some pesticides, he would actually let us know. Which is good information, because sometimes you just go to the farm or to the yard, and then you just want to pick a tomato and eat it. Then you get sick. After spraying, he would come and let us know as a family that I sprayed some chemicals there. Please don't sell these tomatoes. Please do this and this and this. Wait for this amount of days. Then I know that, okay, I'm not supposed to go near near that patch of tomatoes,
yeah,
or this patch of tomatoes has been sprayed, and which we also used to do to tell our customers when they come that no, we have sprayed some chemicals, so we can't sell you these tomatoes for now.
Yeah.
Then they would understand,
and
it actually gives them confidence to come back again, knowing that these people are very much transparent and they're making sure that their crops are good enough for us to eat.
Yeah.
But maybe as a takeaway, as an addition, with these GMOs, I know we spoke about a bit of a wrong than a bit of good about them. I mentioned about the reduction of pesticides, which really helps a lot because some people might not afford pesticides, but they will still need to farm one way or another to make ends meet. And also some of these GMOs are used to improve nutrition content. Like I mentioned about an example with KZN, the floods and, you know, nutrients from the soil being washed away, the plant not able to grow, or even if it grows, it does not have the right amount of nutrients that it should have, then the GMO come into place and the GMO is now having the amount of nutrients that you need to have in your body.
Yeah.
So if you're planting some soybeans, these soybeans are now able to have the right amount of protein inside them. So that when you eat them, you get the right amount of protein that you should actually get from an original soybean. But because of change in climates and how farming is happening, then the soybeans that we're now producing are not having the amount of protein content that they should have. Now we introduce the GMOs.
Yeah.
And the issue of this drought and disease resistance, it's hot now. Some plants can grow. Like right now, we know that our grandmothers should be planting in the fields.
Mm.
But instead, they can't be able to do it because it's scorching hot during the day, scorching hot during the night.
Mm.
And plants cannot survive that because those fields that grandmother is farming in, she can't ensure that there is water like in commercial farms.
Mm.
So she's dependent on the rain, which is no longer coming.
Yeah.
Even the commercial farmers, the more they water, the more they're spending more on money, which actually will also cause us to have expensive food at the end of the day. So they need the GMOs that will actually survive with a little bit of water.
Yeah.
So one way or another, these GMOs does a lot good, or they are doing a lot good for us and our economy, more than the harm that they are also doing, and also less than the harm that they're doing.
I hear you making a business case for these GMOs right there.
It's business sense at the end of the day.
I like that. Here's a comment. I know we're running out of time. I just want to play this voice note from Derek. I hope that you can hear it as well.
Okay.
Hi, Chapelo. Good evening to you and your guest. Really a great show, and I think quite a relevant.
Can you hear it?
It's a very, very low.
Okay, let me see if I can do this.
Hi, Chapelo. Good evening to you and your guest. Really a great show, and I think quite a relevant and pertinent topic, especially with the days that we're living in, with all this cry to go to the country and everything. Two things, Joe, from my side. Number one, I think the guest is interchanging mistakenly so hybridization and genetically modified. When you tweak things to make a certain animal more resilient or a certain crop more resilient, that is not necessarily genetically modifying the so when you strictly speaking GMO, it entails something totally different to just hybridization, where cross-pollinate, like what you were saying, or mix the breeds and so forth. That is not necessarily genetically modifying, and that necessarily is not the challenge that we would be having when people are addressing genetically modified organisms or products, right? That's number one. Number two, I was speaking to a doctor who is a doctor of agriculture with the Agricultural Research Community, ARC, in South Africa. And he was just mentioning how today in 2023, as we are speaking today in November, we only have true crops that can be termed genetically modified. So there's a cultivar, certain cultivars in maize and certain cultivars in rice that are strictly can be termed genetically modified. The rest, yes, hybridization, I mean, that's been going on for years now. I think your guest did mention that, you know, when they started coating the crop with certain dyes and whatnot, which is chemicals that aid the crop in certain things, which is like I'm saying, hybridization and then tweaking the crop so that it's better resistant and so forth. But when you're talking genetically modified organism, which is a challenge with the DNA and the so forth, there are only two in the country, certain cultivars in rice, certain cultivars in maize, and that's it. Nothing else is genetically modified in the country as we're speaking, and I don't know if the guest can confirm that as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much to Derek there as well. And I think it's a good question because this is your area of speciality as well. I don't know if you got to those two points.
Yes, I got the first one. I think it was talking about the two variants of the crops that can be said to be genetically modified.
Yeah, so you were saying there's cultivars in maize, mm-hmm. and there's cultivars in rice as well, and those are the only two genetically modified in the entire country. That's number one. And number two is saying there's a difference between genetically modified foods and hybridization, which he says is what is currently happening in the country for the longest time.
Yes, that is very true. That is very true.
Yeah.
Because with hybridization, they're just combining two different variants of varieties of species, or species just create something.
Yeah.
Like maybe the example that I've been making with the animals. It was just an example. Just try to maybe get a sense of people understanding what this is all about. But when you talk about genetically modified, it's still more or less, you know, the same, because we are now trying to find to create something that we desire, something that we want. And if it's something that we desire, it can be something that we want to solve a certain problem for. Mm. Because sometimes we can desire to have something, but then it not being necessary for us to have it.
Mm.
But in essence, the crops that he's talking about, or the crops that are in that are now put on the table, they were actually genetically modified for us to have more crop yield, for us to have crops that will be able to survive certain climatical changes.
Sure.
Just like I was making an example with the kind of animals, like the cattle. I made an example with the cattle breeding.
Yeah.
Because I know that it's been done so that we can have a specific cattle breed that will be able to survive, maybe the climatic changes that we have, or the certain area that we have, or maybe an animal that will be able to grow faster and become much more stronger than the animal that we currently have. That is still something that we are creating as a desire. So one way or another, at some point in between, yes, those two things can be similar, because we are kind of mixing two different species, or we are trying to develop something, maybe within the lab, genetic or biotechnologies, developing something within the lab that can actually survive specific conditions, or that can fit the desires that we have for that thing. Maybe it's something that would taste nice. Maybe it's something that will be giving nutrients, like I mentioned, on different advantages of having these GMOs.
Yeah.
But yes, it is something that really needs maybe more deliberation on, and talking in essence of how different the hybridization and also GMOs are. And it's very much correct with the kind of sativas that we have in our country.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very true. But then in a broader spectrum, there are so many GMOs that are actually happening, not only in our country, but also in other spaces or other countries that are currently also doing the same thing that has to do with GMOs.
Yeah.
But I think this will need more of deliberation and also more of talk, so that we can find the deep essence of how different these things can be.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's true. Thanks, Derek, for that comment as well. But I think I get what you're saying, and maybe let's unpack this in the next series as well, when we do get time to talk to that. But I think what you're saying is basically the process that you, even with these cultivars, in essence,
yes, I
that's
would guess
exactly that's what we're trying to do.
The difference in the process,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we're genetically modifying them so that we get more and more of that rice or that maize or whatever the case might be, or even through hybridization.
Yes, but is it done in the lab to, exactly, or is it done outside?
Those differences, the GMOs
in the lab.
Yeah.
And then the hybridization in another setup. So more or less the same thing.
I see.
But then if we need to actually make it point blank and clear, it can be different.
Yeah. Well, let's pick up on that conversation on the next time we have this conversation. I really enjoy our talks, and may God continue to bless you, Mr. Mkwem.
No, you too, Tapelo. I really enjoyed them as well. And thank you very much for the opportunity to share and to deliberate further with what we're talking about, sharing knowledge and learning something new as well. Because I do learn a lot when we talk.
All I know is just money, my guy. That's what I know. The rest of the other things and hybridization, you all can just have that conversation there.
This one needs a nice coffee talk.
Definitely.
And we introduce Derek to come into the picture. Yes. So he can also share.
Definitely. Let's do that. Thank you so much, man. Happy birthday and have a good one.
Thank you very much, Tapelo.
Have a good one.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.